This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
An 18-year-old takes a boat out to Horn Island on the 4th of July, along with about 300 other people. A lot of them kids he grew up with in Ocean Springs, teenagers, young people out doing what young people do. 2 days later, a park ranger finds his body in the water off the northwestern tip of that very island. The friends came home. Nolan didn't. And almost every message we've gotten comes down to one question. How do you leave somebody's child on an island 10 miles from shore? That's the big one. Today, we're going to go through your questions, so be sure to drop them in the comments as we're doing this live. And if you're catching this after we air it, drop your questions there, too. We read them all throughout the day, and we will try to address them here as we work through the story as we continue to cover it. The links are in the description, Substack, YouTube, some of the best places to do it. If you're watching us live, X, Facebook, all that. Let us know your thoughts. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with us. As always, not a lot over the weekend. There is going to be some movement on this week, without a doubt. We're likely to see possibly the autopsy results. There's a grand jury convening. That doesn't mean something criminal is happening here. It just means that's how they look at any sort of case where there's some questions involved. So there's going to be some pivotal things likely happening this week. I'm not going to speculate on those yet because we just don't know. They could go any which way. Mm-hmm. We'll follow them wherever they go. I want to address some of the questions that are still out there and really kind of just parse through them, because it's easy in this case. The more I talk about it, the more I'm digging. It is easy to get onto one train and start riding it this way. And you go, whoa, wait a second. Let me jump over here and see it this way. Oh, okay, you're making a lot of sense too. But they're both going very divergently different ways. But if you really look at both of them, there's certainly valid questions on every side of this and valid thoughts on every side of this. The problem is we just don't know the answers. Mm-hmm. I keep coming and thinking about the boat ride home. A lot of people are. Somebody looked around. Somebody saw he wasn't there. And that's not even a question. From what we understand, the boys were under the understanding, again, according to them, if we're going off of what that story is, that they were told, he said, I'm going to go get a ride back. I'm going to go after this girl over there. Even if Nolan said he'd catch another ride, everyone, parents, lots of people who weren't there saying, you don't just leave. You just don't. Well, you just, and all that, whatever. So why did every single one of them go? Why did they leave their friend back on the island? I think I have some pretty simple answers for it. I'm curious as to what your answer is for it.
So you said a lot of great things, as you always do, Tony. So valid questions, but we need to always maintain openness to conclusions because we just don't have all the facts and data yet. But on that question about leaving behind, let's go down the road of thought experiments with human behavior, because mm-hmm. it's easy, like you said, to go down these different paths. Because how do we go down different paths? So we take a starting point and we start filling in details about what we think we would do in hindsight with 2020 without ever having to experience that ourselves. And what I mean by that is the first time you go through a truly fear-motivated moment, you don't know what you're going to do until you move through that fear-motivated moment. You reflect. You say what I would do differently next time, and then you get a rep, and then you do it differently next time. I know this. Every single first responder out there knows this. You know, the first time a cop pulls up to his first car stop and things look a little different than he's facing in training, I can tell you fear hits them about what's this going to do? What's this person doing? Why does this person pull over to the side of the road this way? Until you start establishing a pattern behavior, and that fear is no longer fear, it becomes experience. 9/11 in New York, I watched people jump from the North Tower. I saw people running in chaos. I had management telling me, if you fear for your life, run, because they didn't have a rep in dealing with chaos yet. So when chaos hits, fear hits, and people respond to fight or flight, and they're always going to act in their own best interest in terms of their safety, security, and prosperity from their own point of view, from their own experiences in those moments. I use that as the backdrop to the facts that I see, that we're seeing so far, is we are seeing no significant wobbles in relationships, because I go to relationships first. We're seeing friends. We use those words friends because these people cared for him. There's no leakage saying that there's some strife, there's some animosity. Now, granted, there's some back and forth. We're seeing some fight here, an argument here, whatnot, but we're not seeing any precursors before this, like he's on a boat with an arch enemy or a frenemy or anything like that, because if we did, there'd be more data to go on. What happens, though, is especially when we listen to the call and we got the data and the GPS of not just a leak in a boat, from my optic, if you want to go glass half full, that these is just a horrendous, tragic event. If they feared for their boat sinking, they feared for their lives, you become extremely tunnel vision if this is your first rep in doing something like that. And what happens when you get tunnel vision, people, places, and things kind of drop off. And it's easy for our brain to rationalize, oh, they said this, so I don't have to worry about that, so I'm going to focus on this. Mm-hmm. And this is what we might be seeing here as one possible route going down. I cannot wait for us all to get the results of the autopsy. Yeah. To verify, hopefully verify for everyone, for the parents, all the other people involved, that it was a tragic drowning, an accident, and that hopefully the independent autopsy that the family is doing is going to be congruent with that, because that would be the thing that I think brings everyone the greatest peace to be able to move through this tragic event, but only time will tell.
That autopsy, and both autopsies, is I'm hopefully they line up and that they're, you know, congruent with each other. If they're not, I think that's going to cause more chaos.
Yep.
It will be what it will be. The Coast Guard call I want to hear, which we have not heard yet, that was the one where the Coast Guard waited 13 hours for going out. I'm not the Coast Guard. I don't know how that stuff works. As a layperson, I go, you get a call and there's a missing kid on the island and you're 13 hours later, you go out? Like, what the hell is that all about? Maybe there's a reason. Maybe they get these calls all the time and it's like, well, it turns out 98% of the time it's somebody's on the island or they just didn't hear from their friend or they're drunk or who knows? Is that reason enough not to go out because 98% of the time it goes this way? I don't know. Again, all of that 100% conjecture from my brain that I just spilled out there.
Right.
But we just don't know the answer. So I'd like to know that. Not that I think the Coast Guard is like conspiring with anybody, but I think that might be a question of response and how that is handled. And maybe that should be examined. Maybe it shouldn't. I don't know the answer.
And how many other calls are coming in at the same time, too? All the data we don't have yet.
All of that needs to come in. There's questions there. What we're not seeing, I think, tells us a lot. Again, my conjecture on this, not that it's worth anybody more than anybody else's, but the way that some of this is being painted, and there seems to be this absolute certainty from some that this was some sort of racially motivated attack from his friends. I mean, if you look at some comments, you'd think he went out with a clan for a day on the water. It's like, no, that does not appear to be this whatsoever.
Right.
These friends, many of them of all races, have said, we're a pretty diverse group of kids, as most groups of kids are these days in almost any part of the country. If you haven't seen high schools as of the last 20 some years. And the issue of race, not as big of a deal as it's been to generations 20, 30, 40 or more their peers, because there is so much more intermingling of everybody, which is a wonderful thing. So it's not this against that. I mean, because a good chunk of everybody's a little bit of everything in many cases, which I think is wonderful. So this idea that this is some sort of racially motivated thing, okay, if there was, let's just go down the road of if it is, and again, I don't know the answer to that. Could it be? Sure, anything is possible right now. But if it was, if there was a track record, if there was enough here that this group of friends decided for whatever reason they're going to kill their black friend, And then everyone's going to lie about it and not talk about it. wouldn't you see, I mean, wouldn't you likely see some sort of, number one, leakage on that? It's a group of people. But number two, leading up to this, I would imagine at this point in time, we're talking 2 weeks out since this occurred, and teenagers with phones and everybody who records every damn thing in the world, you don't think if there would be 1,000 videos out there of these friends doing nasty things to their black friend or saying things on camera, that there would be a track record of this if it existed? I would think that would have come out by now, or there'd be some leakage of it somewhere. We've seen nothing of the sort. So that's where I'm going to, is what we're not seeing is telling me, at least in my gut at this moment, that these friends are probably telling the truth, that they don't know what the hell happened to their friend. And they're more heartbroken than anybody else, because this is their actual friend. We're people on the outside. And if that's true, and they lost their friend and they don't know what the hell's going on, and the world's going, you might have something to do with this. My God. I can't imagine what that's like. Now, look, I'm saying it could go any which way, but if we're looking at it from that perspective, what we're not seeing seems to be pretty loud here.
Yeah, and I agree. So things like racism aren't one-offs. You know, if there was a racially motivated intent here, there would have, like you said, there would have been leakage before, there'd be leakage after, there'd be, and again, that's just from what we're seeing in social media. It's what we're seeing being portrayed right now. So
could be wrong.
And if now, if we see text messages and things come out after they do the digital forensics on this, and it supports another conclusion, okay, then we take that in and we shift.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I don't see it. I go past as prologue. If you're not seeing it in the past, the likelihood of it being present today is, it's always a maybe, but it's very, very slim. Now, and you brought up the parents on this. Well, actually, one of the listeners did. Yeah, absolutely. Because, so the parents are different generation, more like our generation or yours, Tony, maybe not up to mine yet. But again, generational things are different. And so they don't live the daily life with their son. They don't know, like, I'm very aware of my kids' friends. My kids are adults. But I wasn't as granular on it about the words, action, the deeds of their friends. I just had a general tenor of them and how they got along, the types of relationship they had. And so if you're a parent and you went through, especially in Mississippi, some racially trying times, no doubt, would you want to ensure that this wasn't a thing? Absolutely, you would. I don't fault anyone for anyone's actions so far on anything. I think the public's getting a little more hyperbole without, because they're jumping to, they're filling in gaps, in other words.
And that seems to be like the dangerous thing with all of it, is that part. I in no way fault invest. You ask the freaking questions. Mississippi's got the worst track record of our country of covering up horrible things done to black people, without a doubt. I mean, it was like Emmett Till, it was like 2023, one of the cases recently. I just did a piece on this the other day where it was like finally like recognized that it was wrong. It was like, it took up until like 5 years ago to like recognize. I mean, it's insane. It's utterly insane. So is it wrong to examine it from that angle? Not at all. Please do.
Yep.
Examine it till the nth degree to make sure. But investigating it and asking the questions is not the same as it is that.
Yep.
And that you're going to get to the, you can't go into that going, I'm going to ask these questions and here's where I know it's going to land. No, you don't know where it's going to land. That's why you're asking the questions. And it's good to be asking the questions. The problem is when the public is going, I know how it should land, how I want it to land, how my conjecture feels like, because that's going to elevate me and my posturing to the world of me being, whatever the hell they want to be, over others. That's the scary part with something like this, because it seems to stir up, the least critical thinkers of our population.
Yeah, it's what we do. I mean, you start seeing patterns of behavior that will support the conclusion you've already come to. And that's why, again, going to your very first thing, I wrote it down, valid questions, but not coming up with any kind of conclusions until you keep taking in data. And you can got to keep going down the road of maybe. You don't rule anything out. But as of right now, as of everything we're seeing a lot of congruency with a group of good friends that made some tragic choices on a day that I think they don't want to relive. And so the rep that they got out of this, so seriously, do you really think any one of these individuals involved would ever do anything to leave someone behind in any aspect of their life again?
No. I mean,
and so it's a horrible way to get a life rep, but everyone has been not self-centered in this. They've been focused on the victim. They've been focused on the victim's family, and they're taking a lot of threats. It's really tragic, sad, but unfortunately not unexpected from what we see on a lot of these cases.
I know. I mean, it's any way you look at it, it's just, it's
horrendous.
Another question here. It says, my son is 19, swims like a fish, and I haven't slept right since I heard the story. Nolan was a college football player, young, strong, healthy. Everyone keeps saying drowning like that explains... everyone keeps saying drowning like that word explains everything. Does that sit right with anybody? Basically, how does this happen? Well, riptides. I mean, how did he get out to the riptide? I don't know. We don't know the answer to that question. But the thing is, once you're in one, you're kind of screwed. And it doesn't really matter how young, strong, and healthy you are.
Yeah, and when it comes to swimming, I speak from a lot of experience on this. I am a swimmer.
Yeah,
you
are. I
swim every day. And I swim every day. I it's not a me moment. Triathlons, long distance swimming. And we have a group at the YMCA, a group of very, very healthy, fit people that are new triathletes, new boxers. I mean, boxers, you can't get more fit than a boxer in a lot of these things. And I watch people that look just like Nolan, his fitness level from football and everything else, come in and sink like rocks. I'm trying to remember what channel I watched this on. This was actually recently, I think it was on Discovery, where they actually ran a competition to see, to demonstrate how hard it is, the difference between swimming in a pool, and they had a bunch of people, they had a dancer, I think, a ballet dancer, they had a football player, and all these different young 20-somethings get in a pool and try to do 100 yards. They struggled, extremely fit 20-year-olds struggled to do that. Then they said, all right, now you're going to go do the same distance in the open ocean. They all had to be picked up but one. And so it's hugely different. Just because you're fit doesn't mean you're fit to swim. There's a huge difference between swimming, and especially if now you throw in 4 to 5 mile an hour riptide, which the research I did the other day shows that it can get that fast out there, which is faster than a regular human being can swim. And then a regular human being that isn't a seasoned swimmer that does it every single day cannot maintain that kind of pace probably for more than about 5 minutes. Seriously, and if you don't think I'm right on this, go in a pool, go to your local YMCA. If you're not a swimmer, see how long you can actually do a lap and keep yourself afloat for. And so it does not surprise me that he was overcome by water if we don't see any of the data points, because you can be as fit as you want to be in the world, but if you're not a swimmer and you're caught in a riptide, you can be seriously in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it happens very, very fast. How he got back out in the water is the question. Here's what I've been kind of wondering. This is what was going to my mind over the weekend and talking about this. So he tells the girl allegedly that he's going to go get a ride back with his guy friends. Tells his guy friends allegedly that he's going to go hang out with the girl. Can both be true at the same time? I think they might be able to be true at the same time. I could see it like him telling his friends, I'm going to go hang out with a girl. Gets out with the girl, and maybe I need that ride back, and the boat's gone. I don't know. There's a lot of ways in real life how this could go down that aren't just the choose-your-own-adventure book, and it's this or that. It's somewhere in the gray
adventure
area.
I like it. Yeah, you're
and,
right.
And it's not, you know, it's not what he was intending either, but somehow he ends up on the island without a ride back. And who knows what happens after that? I'm not so much suspicious of the group of friends that has no track record of anything negative against their friend at all. I'm wondering, who did he meet on the island? I'd be looking more in that lane. And we haven't really heard much about that lane other than the girl that he was interested in. If we're going to go down a road of people being involved here, I would be wondering, what group of strangers might he have gotten involved with that I don't know, maybe didn't feel the same way about someone of his race as his own friends did, which his own friends seem to, you know, everybody's okay, everybody's good, everybody's equal and on the same footing. Maybe he ran into some folks that didn't have that same sort of feeling and were shitty human beings. Or maybe he met up with some strangers and they did and everything was fine, but there was a horrible accident and nobody wants to be responsible for that happening to the stranger. Ranger kid that came up and was hitching a ride with him. There's a lot of possible motivations here as to why people may not be talking. And it doesn't necessarily equal it being anything to do with race, other than it may have a lot more to do with people not wanting to be accountable for whatever happened. If anything happened, if anybody even knows anything, could Nolan have gone back out into the water? He's there. He's with the girl or whatever. Maybe he can't find the girl. I'm going to go swim more with all the people out there, and gets caught in the riptide, taking a moment by himself. Oh, it's kind of nice. And then whoosh, gone. Nobody knows. Nobody caught it. There's a lot of possibilities here. But I am wondering about, you know, who else was on the island that day, and what sort of footage we're going to find and what we're going to see as evidence pops up. Where do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, from what I understand, I think, what was the number, Tony? I think it's like 60 people have been interviewed is what I saw so far.
That's what I've seen,
Yeah, so that's good. So we're talking a lot of people because basically from what you laid out, and I completely agree, the friends aren't giving us wobbles. We're seeing a consistent pattern of behavior from them. So I'd be focused on where we have blanks of data, which is what happened on that island after the friends left. And so you get that blanks starting to be filled in when you do the interviews. If I know we had limited cell reception here, but if there's any way to get pings, you can see what cell phones are present. You could actually identify through national security letters or subpoenas without being too intrusive. So you don't really need much to get, say, identify which cell phones are present. So you can actually identify who to interview. So that's what they're going through right now to start piecing together and filling in the blank data points that are going on that island after the friends left. Because I think that's where we're really all questioning right now.
Yeah.
Because if you keep drilling down on the friends, I think you're going to keep coming up with what you're coming up with. Not a lot of new information.
Well, I see a comment here. Some of your scenarios are far-fetched. Yeah, I mean, some of them may be. But so nobody saw this kid in distress. That's the point. Most drownings, nobody sees it happening statistically. That's a fact. And you may not like it. It may not go with the narrative how you think drownings work, but it's how they work. That's why they're drownings. Because suddenly the person's just gone and they don't see the person, especially in a riptide. So yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's how drownings work. It's a fact, whether it's this case or any case, most of them are not noticed. That's how it goes down. And that's the scary part of this is, and that's what I wonder too. Yeah. So let's just for a moment say,
and I'm sorry. And one second there too, when you think about it, cause the way you laid it out with all the friends there, if you actually saw a couple of video clips, people aren't paying attention to water. They're paying attention to all the chaos and all the partying and stuff going on the beach. And so if someone slips into the water, it could very potentially go unnoticed. Anyway, to your point.
Especially if they are moving around and it's a large group of people and nobody notices there's anything wrong because there's so much chaos going on at that moment in time. But let's say, here's another scenario. Let's say nobody saw him in distress. Let's say people did see him in distress. You got 300 some people around and you're telling me that every single one of them or whatever group, let's say there's 5, 10, whatever, strangers, complete fucking strangers, see some kid out in the water in distress. You don't think they're going to be talking about that? Mm-hmm. They had nothing to, you don't think they're going to be like, my God, yes, I saw him. He was out there. He was drowning. You'd have people saying that right away. You're not going to get a bunch of strangers going, shit, we saw somebody we didn't know drowning out there. Nobody say a word.
And it all wasn't just
what kind of scenario is that?
I know, and it's all not just one group out there. There's multiple different groups. This is a big conglomeration of people that go to this island, and so there's no way you're going to get one ringleader to silence a bunch of people. Conspiracy theories and trying to get a large number of people to comply with lying and deception and hiding agendas. It doesn't work.
So if he did drown in the public sphere where there's people, no one saw him.
Right.
I just don't see any scenario where somebody would have seen him and not said, oh my God, I saw this kid out there drowning. They're not like, well, he was a black kid, so I'm not going to report that. No, I just don't buy that at all, that nobody would say anything. now, could there be a nefarious area to this? Yes, but I don't see it being in a public sphere where everybody's seeing him drowning and just like, continue on with the party.
Right.
I see, I mean, if he was out privately with some people with strangers or something that he didn't know. If something went down, okay. But again, that seems like a somewhat far off scenario too, where people who are out partying one day decide to pick up the stranger and murder him. Like, hey, let's murder the black kid that came on the boat that asked for a ride back, and then let's go out to Applebee's. You know, it's doesn't make sense much either.
And so here's what's really good from an investigative standpoint, I think, is going to help everyone come to a conclusion eventually, is because when they've done approximately 60 interviews, it's a very, very tight group of people that have been there. In other words, it's not like people coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. I really think so. You go out there on a boatload of people, and if you have just, say, each boat can carry like 4 to 5 people.
Yeah,
that's a typical bow rider. It's a typical pontoon boat. It's a typical boat that goes there. And so if you only have one person on each boat being able to identify who else was on that boat, which is a high probability, you now know who to interview. And so the interviewers are now, what are they doing? They're baselining, looking for wobbles. They're looking for data. Yeah. They're looking for cell phones. They're looking for everything. They're looking for incongruencies in stories. They're looking for all the data would see. All right, here's a group that, all right, we can move on from this group. We can move on from this group. We might have a little wobble in this group, so we're going to focus in on this. And so I think that's because it is a very, I wouldn't say controlled environment, but it's not like you have thousands of people that you're trying to identify that have been coming and going. I think it's going to be a very, very much more manageable group of people they can conduct interviews with. Again, my conjecture, not being on that island, but from what we're seeing and what I'm seeing as of right now, I think that they have a really high probability of getting to the ground truth of what actually transpired eventually when they get all the interviews done, they get the autopsies done, the two autopsies done, and they conduct all the interviews that are available.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm saying anything is possible, but I think we need to look at things from a logical lens on the ground and not, whew, let's get caught up. And that's what we're trying to do. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll follow it wherever this leads.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.